When the possibility of atomic war was on the minds of Americans, we often wondered whether nuclear war was something we could stop. In a way, many people felt that nuclear technology had taken control of our lives. That's a curious thing to believe, since technology is our invention and is supposed to serve us. But there are many examples of technologies that are potentially destructive, but which we can't seem to rein in. One example is the automobile, with its threat of global warming. Some would say genetic engineering is another example. Technology seems to be driven by the marketplace, but should our political system decide what technology should be given the green light? And do we have a practical philosophy about technological development? Joining me to talk about this subject is Andrew Feenberg. He is a Canada Research Chair in Philosophy of Technology at Simon Fraser University in Vancouver. He's also editor of a new book called The Essential Marcuse, about the late professor at UCSD. And Andrew Feenberg joins me in studio. Andrew, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Tom.
And listeners, if you have any opinion about this subject, give us a call at 888-895-5727, 888-895-KPBS. So you're a professor of the philosophy of technology. What does that mean, and what kind of things do you study and write about?
Philosophy of technology is a branch of social philosophy. That is to say, philosophy that studies society and how it works. And technology, of course, plays a huge role in modern social life. So we need to think about the implications of that fact. We do live in a completely different way from everybody in the past. In the last couple hundred years, we've completely transformed the world. Most people used to grow food. Now most people live in cities, at least in the wealthy countries. People were stuck in a little village. They had no communication really with the outside world. Now people are on the internet all the time and watching news on television. So we could go on like this, but these changes have huge implications that need to be discussed, and that's the task of philosophy of technology.
Do you think we do discuss them enough?
Well, I think they're constantly on the news and in our minds in various ways, but what's lacking is perhaps some perspective on just how radical the changes and how all these different changes fit together in a picture of something we could call the modern world, or modernity is the fashionable noun that we use to talk about it.
You know, all human beings, you know, going back, if you go back enough generations, have been religious people, have had belief in God or spirits, have had faith in God. Now it seems like a lot of us have faith in technology. And do you agree with that? And do you feel that that leads to an unquestioning belief that technological development is a good thing?
Well, I think it's certainly the case that there's a popular ideology which says that technology is an unstoppable force for good. And I think that that's less and less believed. So it's as though we were losing our faith. Because there's so many evidences to the contrary, things like global warming and the nuclear weapons issue that you pointed out make people a little nervous about technology. And surveillance now has been perfected to the point where they can watch you in the bathroom from a satellite, brushing your teeth. These kinds of changes have come to public attention and erode the faith in progress that was so important in the past.
You know, there's faith in progress, there's faith in technology, and there seems to be a bit of an opposite view, which has been expressed by many philosophers, which is the dystopian view of technology. What is the dystopian view?
Well, you know what a utopia is, of course.
I think so, yeah.
A perfect society. Utopia is a place where individual and society are in harmony and no longer in conflict. A dystopia is the opposite. The dis there is the same word that's in dysfunctional. So it's a perfectly awful society in which individuals have been completely submitted to social power and become simple cogs in the machinery of production.
Heidegger was a dystopian, wasn't he?
Well, I think that his philosophy of technology, Heidegger was a famous German philosopher who in the 20th century. And his philosophy is a kind of dystopian view of technology in which human beings become more and more cogs in their own machine. Of course, the most famous dystopia is Brave New World, which most people have read, I think, and it gives a picture of people as machines.
And there's also the Charlie Chaplin film, Modern Times. Remember that one?
That's a great film.
My guest is Andrew Feinberg. He's a Canada Research Chair in Philosophy of Technology at Simon Fraser University in Vancouver. He used to teach at San Diego State, and in fact, he's in town to sign copies of his new book, which is called The Essential Marcuse. That's tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at D.G. Will's bookstore in La Jolla. If you want to join our conversation about philosophy of technology, give us a call at 888-895-KPBS. Well, where do you come when you look at faith in progress, faith in technology, or the dystopian view? Where do you come down on that?
I'm trying to avoid both extremes, because I think that we can make a modern society that's better than the one we're living in, but it's not going to happen because of pure technical progress uncontrolled by human intention. What happens when people just let technology roll is that business and government, essentially the Pentagon, make all the decisions. And those decisions may be convenient for them, but they could be quite inconvenient for the rest of us. We need more democratic control of technology. We don't need to get rid of technology. We need a more democratic system for deciding on the direction of development.
Let's take a call from Jana in Hamul. Jana, go ahead.
I was calling in to comment on how, at least in the medical field, technology has excelled what we can do for patients just beyond belief, especially in the past 5 and 10 years. And on what the gentleman just said regarding the government becoming involved, in the state of California, we've got the whole stem cell research issue that the rest of the country is all looking at, and that's a matter of technology that we have no idea what we can find, and people are afraid, and so we're limiting ourselves on what we can find that way. But my original point in technology in the medical field is phenomenal. And if anybody gets sick now, we can usually find out what's wrong with them. 10 years ago, we were still guessing on all kinds of things. So that's just my comment. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jana. How would you like to respond to that, Andrew?
Well, I certainly approve of advances in medicine, especially the ones that I'm likely to benefit from. I think people who are technophobic and would like to get rid of the technology would generally stop at penicillin. So there's no doubt about that. On the other hand, there are issues that arise around the technologization of medicine. The most familiar one is simply the doctors having become gatekeepers for very expensive high-tech medicine no longer have much time for patients. And so many things that used to go on between doctors and patients are squeezed now into 7-minute office visits. And that's a problem. It's not a problem for which there's no solution. It's not the fault of the CAT scanner, but it's a problem in the structure of medicine that we need to address.
Medical technology is an interesting example. When you look at the question of who makes a decision about what technologies and what innovations get developed, because in medicine, I would argue it's often the marketplace, especially when you look at big pharma. I mean, they're not interested in developing drugs that are not going to be profitable. They're interested in developing drugs that are going to be profitable. So I guess my question is, who really decides what technology gets developed? Is it government or is it the marketplace?
In the case of medicine, it's mostly the marketplace, but government does intervene sometimes, importantly, for example, to protect our safety and forbid the sale of dangerous medicines. And also, a law was passed some years ago to provide money to develop orphan drugs, that is to say, drugs for diseases that don't have a large market, so that there wouldn't be people who are shut out simply because they had a rare disease. So there's a significant amount of government intervention into the health technology, and that's quite important for our confidence in the medical system.
When you say that society should be making democratic choices about what technology gets developed and what doesn't. I guess some people would listen to that and say, it sounds like you're suggesting that we stand in the way of technology, at least stand in the way of some technological developments that you would consider to be negative.
Of course, everybody would like us to stand in the way of technological developments that, for example, might deprive people of life and liberty. We don't want frontal lobotomies performed anymore. That should be illegal. I just think there are many, many technologies that should be blocked. We don't want human beings cloned, things of this sort. But that's not this to say that we want to obstruct technological development as a whole, that we want to channel it in directions that are beneficial to society and conform with our values. And we may need to improve our values, too, in response to changes in the world that we ourselves have provoked with our technology, as in the case of global warming.
What about government regulation of the Internet?
Well, that's a special case. The Internet started out, it was created by the military, and it was created for purposes that have nothing to do with what it's currently being used for. And one of the effects of that is the military did not anticipate millions of people exchanging emails and information on the Internet, so they didn't provide any way to control the flow of data. And we have all benefited from this peculiar accident and don't want it to be taken away from us. So we're anxious that there not be government regulation in the case of the Internet. Of course, there are things we might prefer to see, like scams and spams and phishing and so on. We might like to see those things eliminated from the environment of the Internet. But we can't figure out a way to eliminate them without losing our freedom to communicate on the Internet, and we'd rather have the freedom. So, and this is a case where it's non-regulation. That's the great decision that society is making.
So do you feel that we control technology, or does technology often control us?
Well, I think that's a strange way to put the question, since we are ourselves, to a great extent, products of the technologies that we create. It's much more complicated than our relationships to a hammer, say, or a saw. Technology is no longer a tool. It's a life environment, and we live inside it. It's the kind of co-construction of human beings and their artifacts that should characterize this situation rather than control or being controlled in the usual sense that we give those terms.
A lot of people say if you live in San Diego, you have to have a car.
That's for sure. You certainly are condemned to automobile ownership if you're a San Diegan, and that's the effect today of decisions made 50 years ago about how to organize the city.
Well, my guest has been Andrew Feenberg. He's a Canada Research Chair in Philosophy of Technology at Simon Fraser University in Vancouver. He's also editor of The Essential Marcuse, and that's a collection of essays by the late Professor Marcuse of UCSD.
That's correct. Marcuse was interested in technology, and he was my teacher and got me started on thinking about technology.
Well, Andrew Feenberg will sign copies of The Essential Marcuse tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at D.G. Wills Bookstore in La Jolla. And Andrew, thank you so much for coming in.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.